The God Candle idea is one that I think is still in play because of the pent-up buying demand we have right now. And you have a surfeit of derivatives that have entered the market in the last year or so with Wall Street getting involved. And I think they're kind of positioning themselves and helping each other out, build big positions. And then we'll see a big move. And that's what I expect. The only thing you have to know about price is that Bitcoin's purchasing power will...
Kathy Wood recently said, upon coming to El Salvador and seeing what we're building here, she walked away and she said, you know what? El Salvador is going to 10x their GDP in the next 5 years. Max and I are here because we're betting that he's going to deliver this 10x in 5 years. And we want to be part of it. If you're going to 10x your economy, you're not going to do that on just trying to manufacture some clothing or something like that. So once they have a way out, Bhutan is mining Bitcoin, El Salvador is accumulating Bitcoin, you know.
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I'm joined by the legends of El Salvador, Max and Stacy. Max, I recently heard you on a podcast where you predicted a massive Godzilla candle with Bitcoin rapidly shooting up. But Bitcoin price has been relatively stagnant recently. Do you still think that we'll see Bitcoin's price shoot up here pretty quickly?
Sure. I also said that the least interesting part about Bitcoin is the price. And the hash rate's more interesting. The difficulty adjustments are interesting. The global sovereign adoption is more interesting. There's a whole list of stuff that's more interesting than price. The only thing you have to know about price is that Bitcoin's purchasing power will increase against everything, everywhere, forever, and everything goes to zero against Bitcoin. The God Candle idea is one that I think is still in play because of the pent-up buying demand we have right now. And you have a surfeit of derivatives that have entered the market in the last year or so with Wall Street getting involved. And I think they're kind of positioning themselves and helping each other out, build big positions. And then we'll see a big move. And that's what I expect.
Yeah, I mean, you brought up the hash wars, and I know that you've kind of coined that term or seen that is the way of the future. Now, you know, I think that this is pretty interesting, even though I know you said price is one of the more boring aspects, but we've seen hash rate rise up dramatically. So do you see that as like a continuing trend where, you know, it's not only, you know, at home miners or anything like that, but more nation states start to get into Bitcoin mining?
Right. Like I said, hash rate is more interesting than price. Hash rate's never really been in a bear market. Hash rate's been going up continuously since day one. And it tells you the commitment of people throwing resources and energy at the network. You know, the price will fluctuate, but the trend of people throwing more network at the network is really substantial. And now we've got major nation states involved. We've got El Salvador, of course. Bhutan has come out and said they've got over 13,000 Bitcoin. We've got a couple of more countries in play. I know here at the Bitcoin office in El Salvador that Stacy runs, you know, she is really on top of making sure that Bitcoin in El Salvador, it remains competitive as the global hash rate heats up, I'd say, Stacy.
Yeah, Stacy, that's right. Tell us about that.
So, the Bitcoin office, it has been, was founded 21 months ago. And yeah, we are responsible for basically establishing the foundation upon which the nation will be ready for this hyper Bitcoinization, you might call it, or the, you know, when everything gets priced against Bitcoin, essentially, when the paradigm we already see is shifting. We see Wall Street massively adopting Bitcoin. We see presidential candidates in the United States fighting to see who could be the most Bitcoin. So I think El Salvador is so far ahead, and people don't understand why. I mean, okay, on one hand, you have Bhutan, which has mined a lot of Bitcoin with their massive hydropower, but we have years ahead in terms of how much we have prepared the population. So we have several, like five or six different really important education projects. For example, we're currently right now, as we speak here, we are training 80,000 civil servants in El Salvador. They have a 1-hour masterclass with me and Max explaining to them why El Salvador chose Bitcoin, why we are Bitcoin country and why we are not the 5.5 million other tokens in the crypto space. And then they have a 3-day masterclass with a 3-day course taught by, you know, some important Bitcoiners, some engineers in the Bitcoin space. So we're training the civil servants. We're training the children. We're writing, we're currently producing a workbook for children for grade school K through 8. We have in the high schools, we have Mi Premier Bitcoin. So we've been training, teaching students, educating students on that level, at high school level, for the past year and a half. We have Kubo Plus, which is the advanced university level elite education program to train domestic, Bitcoin and Lightning devs. We have Node Nation, which is a program to introduce into the high schools the more physical aspect of Bitcoin, so they can because Bitcoin, in one way, you know, is the course we teach to the university level, for example, at Kubo Plus. We start first for a few months with history, ideology, you know, the philosophy, the more esoteric things that are, the ideas behind Bitcoin. And then we get into the actual coding and how Bitcoin is assembled. But with Node Nation, we're teaching high school students, we're showing them how to assemble nodes, how to assemble ASICs. So they're actually seeing the physical part of Bitcoin. And that's been a really good eye opener for them and an educational tool.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, essentially going to be the backbone of more of these countries where, you know, we're either going to start to be developing some sort of mining background or something like that. So, with your conversations with like Bukele and others, what are they seeing as the value of kind of building in Bitcoin with that infrastructure? I mean, I know Bukele just announced for the first time ever that El Salvador is not going to have to take out any debt for government spending next year. And I think that's, you know, a huge, huge positive. So, you know, how are other countries kind of taking notice of the massive steps that El Salvador is taking?
Well, the fact that you're asking about El Salvador and that you know about El Salvador, that is first and foremost because of Bitcoin, right? Bitcoin came first, and then the world's media focused on El Salvador. After that, then came the security policies, and now El Salvador is officially the safest country in the Western Hemisphere. And obviously, that has solidified our place in the global consciousness and the global mind share of a very interesting place where a renaissance is happening, something interesting is happening. But first came Bitcoin. And of course, you know, this is something that we understood for a long time in terms of the financial press. The financial press is the most important press actually globally, because it is global. It's not just domestic. Like most political news is just domestic. They're political characters, political candidates, people fight over them, and it's a soap opera. But financial news is global and it's important, right? So when we got Bitcoin as legal tender here, Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, Financial Times, all of them turned their column inches that cost millions of dollars to take an ad, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to take an ad out in the Wall Street Journal. But they were devoting many column inches to El Salvador over the course of many, many months, talking about El Salvador. And you know that sort of Streisand effect, is suddenly people heard about El Salvador and knew about El Salvador and were, you know, many of the articles were trying to maybe say bad things about El Salvador. But of course, it interested unique people around the world, the sort of pioneers and innovators and, risk takers, the people who build new countries, the people that came to El Salvador to build a new El Salvador. So I think we have, you know, I say it's a Renaissance 2.0. Some people say, oh, it's like a Singapore 2.0 they're building there. But Singapore is just like a financial center. What we're building is something so much bigger. It's like a Rome 2.0, a Florence 2.0, an Alexandria 2.0. Like all the, we try by policy and intent to attract the best and brightest to El Salvador. and the best and brightest, whether they're attracted to Silicon Valley or now Austin's trying to get them, or many nation states actually fight for the best and brightest around the world. Their immigration policies are those point systems to see the best and brightest, like to target those individuals to come to their country and build it. Well, they're coming to El Salvador now. We're targeting those sort of people to come build something that's quite extraordinary here. And anybody who comes, and you'll, you know, if you come for adopting Bitcoin in mid-November, you'll see something extraordinary. I think you'll see why El Salvador is now, you know, part of the zeitgeist, like why the world knows about little El Salvador. It's a little country of 6.5 million people, but our impact is pretty big and extraordinary compared to our size.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago, the Turkish holding company, Yilport, I think, promised about $1.62 billion, if I'm looking at this correctly, into El Salvador's port infrastructure. Now, do you think that's in big part because of the adoption of Bitcoin, or is it more of, you know, Bukele's influence and kind of his influence globally, or maybe a combination of both?
Well, it's hard to extract from any individual. You know, once you become a Bitcoiner, that's part of your character, right? The sort of person who has already adopted Bitcoin, and he first started, you know, he tweeted in 2017, President Bukele tweeted in 2017 that he would make Bitcoin legal tender. Basically, he said that in 2017. So he's been a Bitcoiner for a while, and it's a mindset, right? There's an attitude. And I think anybody who meets him, and he went to Turkey 2 years ago in, I think it was 2022, and he met with President Erdogan and officials there. And I think, you know, you meet him and you see that he's serious. It's not just the sort of caricature that is has been painted in some of the media. When you meet him, you see that he's actually a leader. And it's not often that we see a leader anymore, right? Somebody who can inspire, somebody who has a vision and will stand by that vision and defend that vision and bring the whole population along. So he's brought the entire country, something like 92% support here, the whole country along with his vision. And I think when you meet that in person, people are inspired no matter who you are, even if you're ahead of a powerful country. And so I think his trip to Turkey resulted in that $1.6 billion investment in El Salvador. And you're going to see even more of that coming up.
Yeah, 100%. And that's all going to, I think, like Bitcoin, the Bitcoin City project, which is very encouraging. And, you know, you brought up the Bitcoin aspect of things. Now, Max, you were really critical of Donald Trump when he came to the Bitcoin conference here just a few short months ago. And then yesterday he had announced some shitcoin project on X as well. So do you see any, I guess, almost parallels between Bukele and Trump just because of, you know, the anti-government kind of for the state? But obviously, there's some differences in some of their ideology and mindset and things like that. But do you see parallels and differences between the two? Are you looking for the best way to store your seed phrase? Well, I've got it for you. It's Stampseed. They've got the number one punch place where you can order a full-on package where they've got every single thing. They've got all the letters. You could just get it in there. And they've got this sick, sick hammer, which they've engineered to make it so easy for you to punch in that titanium steel plate and store your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. So go ahead and get your Bitcoin off of these exchanges and use promo code GREENCANDLE for 15% off. They're helping power this show. They've got the Bitcoin logo. You can punch it into your seed phrase as well if you could see it here. They've got a lot of cool stuff. And now I'm helping empower you to get your Bitcoin off an exchange utilizing Stampseed and storing your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. Now get to it. All right, back to the show.
Right. Well, the Bitcoin learning curve is really, it's five steps. The first step is I just found out about Bitcoin. Here's how you fix it. And Donald Trump seems to be on that step. So he's on the first step toward a five-step process. And so we'll see whether he makes it to step number five. Most people don't. Very few people get to step five. They get waylaid over the course of their Bitcoin education. So we'll see how that plays out. And there is, of course, this global hash war going on. It's important for countries to have a Bitcoin reserve because as you head to a global Bitcoin standard, when you do trade with other countries, they will only take Bitcoin, right? So we're heading into an era where doing trade globally, countries don't want fiat money. And we already see that happening with the dollar is being de-dollarization is happening all over the world. And also Bitcoin is demonetizing gold as well. So people, so countries don't want more gold or they prefer Bitcoin. So you can only trade and be a part of the active global community to the extent that you have some Bitcoin in reserves. So El Salvador is already aware of that, and they're buying Bitcoin every single day. The U.S. is still wed to the dollar in really a fatal mistake that will go down in history as their comeuppance and probably the number one reason why they didn't make it through the 21st century. And other countries are and companies are waking up to the fact that we're only as relevant and as strong as the Bitcoin that we have. And that's becoming understood more more every day.
Yeah, no, I agree. Go ahead, Stacey.
I was going to say, I also think, you know, the U.S. naturally has a more proof of stake mindset at this time versus what El Salvador is at. So, of course, the U.S. is able to print as many dollars as it wants and, you know, force all nations to abide by whatever it wants to do. So, of course, it makes sense that the mindset more there would be that they don't want to have to actually work because it's not easy, right? We've been building Bitcoin Country for 3 years and it's not easy. We can't just like sit back and let wait for things to come to us. And that's sort of the mindset of Trump, right? Because that's the mindset of America in general, especially since post-COVID when we've become more European in that everybody gets free money. Like it's that Oprah meme, right? Everybody gets as much money as you want to sit home and work from home. El Salvador doesn't have that mindset and they've never been able to afford that mindset. For 40 years, there was a civil war, then gang war, and then corruption. Their own currency, the colon, collapsed, back in like 1990, 2000. And so we've been on a US dollar standard here. So they were already like used to having to work to earn hard money, right? The US dollar was not a currency that they could print. So they already had the mindset here of that. So I think the US can afford for a longer time, though they don't realize that nobody can afford this. But what they can think they afford is, to be second best, to adopt the second best, to be the money printers in the crypto world. We watch this and we know for a fact that like Ethereum is down, for example, the number two is down 46% against Bitcoin in the past 2 years. So that's since the Bitcoin office was created that, Ethereum is down. These are choices that we can't make those mistakes. We can't afford to make those mistakes in El Salvador. The U.S. has giant capital markets, huge, vast quantities of wealth, resources and things like that, that they can burn, they blow. And their mindset is that, they could always print more. They could always, there's a vast, head west. There's always something more to colonize or something like that. But the mindset here has been, we can't do that. And because of that, because we are, however, shifting into this new world, this post-Bitcoin world, the hyper-Bitcoinized world, I think we will come out the winners. We will come out a very powerful country relative to our size and our resources. We don't have the geographical resources, the commodity resources, but we do have the best and brightest, and we do have the best money.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, I agree with you there, Stacey. It's more of like the U.S. is on like a debt-based mindset. And obviously, El Salvador and Bukele moving for a debt-free budget in 2025, I think is a major step forward for, I guess more of that Bitcoin-ized mindset. But, Max, you brought up a lot about the hash wars. How important do you think that the recent investment into, the volcano mining and how much El Salvador has been investing into, the hash wars is going to play in the success, both Max and Stacey? How do you guys think that's going to play into the success of El Salvador going forward?
Well, it's cheap energy, and it's energy that's green, sustainable, and long-lasting, unlike other forms like solar and wind tend to have to be constantly maintained and upgraded, et cetera, whereas geothermal plant lasts 50, 60, 70 years, and we have a lot of volcanoes here, and so we're converting that energy into Bitcoin mining, and a lot of that output goes onto the country's permanent reserves. I mean, for the U.S. to catch up to El Salvador now on a like-to-like GDP comparison, the U.S. would need right now to have over $1 trillion worth of Bitcoin, given the size of their economy. So with El Salvador having getting close to $500 billion worth of Bitcoin in a million in a $31 billion economy, it's already a significant part of their overall structure. And that's going to give people an enormous advantage going forward. We were coming out of an era where size gives you an advantage. And we're entering into an era where size can be a disadvantage. So the size of maintaining the U.S. And the U.S. military is becoming burdensome and onerous. And it looks unsustainable. And we're seeing that right now. And the same thing happens usually in all empires. The Roman Empire, they ran out of money to defend themselves. The soldiers wouldn't take the denarius anymore. They were doing the coin clipping, and they just walked away, and the empire collapsed. I think you see that in the U.S. right now. You see that in Europe right now. The paper money has gone down in value to the point where the military and the security people don't accept it. They don't want it. It's just not worth their time and energy, and so they will collapse. And here in El Salvador, we have the opposite.
I think it also shows that important thing that I just mentioned several times is the mindset. And the mindset is that there is an opportunity, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, not even just once-in-a-lifetime. We have a once-in-500-year type leader in El Salvador, and we have a once-in-5,000-year sort of opportunity right now with Bitcoin. There have only been two other layer one monies, which is gold and the U.S. Treasury. So this sort of moment in time does not happen often. There's only been two other times in U.S. in global history, human history. And here's another moment right now. And that is we're still early with Bitcoin. And if we can work hard enough and we seize this opportunity, the opportunity must be recognized and seized, then that is really important that it's not just President Bukele and Max and Stacey, it's the entire country realizes and understands the opportunity that has presented itself to El Salvador. And so again, though the Bitcoin office is 21 months old, we've been operating here, bringing in the best and brightest and building that foundation, this very solid foundation, preparing for this. So we are so ready that other people, in a way that people don't really understand, that the hard work that went in, just like there were like 20 years of hard work that actually went in before Bitcoin was birthed. Like this is what El Salvador has been doing with our programs of, their regulatory and legal framework that no other countries are, they're so much further behind than us, but also the education projects across the country and the mindset that we've been, encouraging, the mindset of Bitcoin, as the Bitcoiners, that honey badger mindset of like, this is our time. Bitcoiners were acting like they were going to, that this was a new revolutionary, this was a moment in history. We were talking like that back in 2010 or 2011. Like people, I mean, even Hal Finney, like 2 days after the first Bitcoin was mined, was like, this could go to $10 trillion. Like that's a mindset of a Bitcoiner. And that's what we have in El Salvador that other nations will take a while to instill, but it's hard work. So you're going to, like, Europe and the United States have had it so easy on a fiat standard, and it's going to take way longer for them, I believe, to just shift out of that mindset, because you have to shift out of the mindset of getting free money. It's hard to suddenly have to work, right? When you just are eating bonbons all day at somebody else's expense, right? Like when you're printing money, somebody else in the rest of the world is financing your lifestyle. So once they have a way out, Bhutan is mining Bitcoin, El Salvador is accumulating Bitcoin, there's going to come a point very soon where we don't need to finance the lifestyle of Americans who are receiving Biden bucks or Trump dollars or any of this, the free money.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, there's definitely been a lot of, you know, growing policies and everything like that. And I want to get into all that. But first, you know, we've talked about kind of like the transition from the fiat mindset into more of like the Bitcoin mindset. Well, the kind of in between of that is almost like the bond market and where that is. Now, there's been, you know, the rumors of the volcano bonds, and I haven't really heard too much about that in a little bit. Is that project still going on? And is that something that you see as a potential for, you know, El Salvador to almost utilize the current system in order to move into the Bitcoin system more?
Well, the Bitcoin office announced back in, I think it was late December of 2023, early January of this year, that the volcano bond, well, you know, we needed to pass the regulatory and legal framework in order for the bond to be issued. That didn't totally happen. And we needed to hire all the you know, the executives and the staff that would fill the bureaucratic agency, the regulatory agency, to issue the bond. And that didn't happen until like November of last year. So it took a while to build the framework and the institutions in order to be able to issue the bond. And now it's passed, it's been approved. It has regulatory approval, and it's the first to receive regulatory approval with the, you know, the legal framework that El Salvador has. But it'll be, it's ready to be issued. So it's when the president issues it, then that's the time. Of course, he wasn't in office until June 1st of this year. So the first 6 months, you know, he wasn't in office. But, you know, we do know, as he has stated publicly, this is his second term, and he on achieving what Kathy Wood recently said upon coming to El Salvador and seeing what we're building here. She walked away and she said, you know what, El Salvador is going to 10x their GDP in the next 5 years. And we believe that's possible. So, you know, sure, volcano bonds fit within that sort of paradigm, right? Like if you're going to 10x your economy, you're not going to do that on just, you know, trying to manufacture some clothing or something like that. This is a high tech. It's Bitcoin. It's AI. It's being a regional tech hub or even a Latin American tech hub. I think some big things are coming, and it's you'll basically, you should subscribe to President Bukele's X stream, and he'll let you know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's been putting out some great policies. I know that, you know, he's been very tax friendly to tech jobs that are coming down there. Now, how important do you think that is? And as two people that have been in El Salvador, you know, what has the change been like when you've seen, you know, a bunch of places and companies start to come down to El Salvador to, you know, as you're seeing the talent sort of flood in?
Right. Well, we talk about recreating kind of a Silicon Valley-like environment, and Silicon Valley had three major components to it: education, capital, and entrepreneurs. And so here in El Salvador, we have the entrepreneurs and we have the capital. And as Stacy has talked about, now we have the education. So you put those three together and you have everything you need to recreate that kind of excitement around entrepreneurs raising money and building new companies, new ventures. And we're seeing that happen. We're actually, Stacy would have kind of a greater update on this, but we're seeing kind of the second generation almost of students, where the first class of students are now out in the wild getting jobs and helping to recruit the second generation of students. So the bet that was made a couple of years ago that, in fact, if you go out into the country and canvas the country and find the smartest kids out there who have an aptitude for technology and software and Bitcoin, you can build a cornerstone of this emerging tech-driven economy. And that's pretty much what happened.
Yeah, I'll elaborate on that further, because it is exactly by design. So when I always say El Salvador is winning, I mean, that is like us speaking to ourselves. Like that's our aim, is to win. And so we do everything to win, and we do everything by design. And when we set out to establish Kubo Plus, which is our advanced, it's very elite, you know, Bitcoin and Lightning devs program. And we are training the best and brightest, like we are scouring the nation and picking by hand the best young Salvadorans. Then we're scouring the globe looking for the very best Bitcoin engineers and educators to come to El Salvador and teach these students. And we're also taking the very, very best of the best here, and we're sending them to places like Tuscany and Lugano for further education, and with a, like the Plan B summer school and courses. The course that they attended in Tuscany was with Adam Back and stuff like that. So we're intentionally targeting the best and brightest to create the best and brightest. And that came about with the intent of creating that Silicon Valley effect, because Max and I, when we first came here, we have experience as VC investors. We're one of the first Bitcoin VC investors. We were like in Kraken. We invested in like in 2011 or 12 when they first were founded. But we came here with the notion of like, let's invest capital. We have capital. We can bring capital and we'll invest in capital. And then you realize, well, it wasn't the capital that came first to Silicon Valley. It was the entrepreneurs. It was first the schools, right? Berkeley and Stanford had all these computer science students, and those students were in one location at two elite universities in the United States. And then you had HP, Hewlett Packard and stuff there. And you started, the talent was there first. And then the capital started to pour in and the VCs started to move in, right? So we were like, okay, let's create the talent pool here. And, you know, this Wall Street investor who goes on Twitter by Macroscope 17, I think it is, he's made some really interesting observations, because he came to El Salvador in December of 2023 and then August of 2024. And he said in that time period, and that's, by the way, when the first inaugural class of Kubo Plus graduated, and we have 50 students that graduated, 21 at the elite level, and seven of them at the super elite level. And those students all meet here in El Salvador all the time in San Salvador. They have meetups. They are creating their own environment, their own ecosystem. And we have now a second class. We've had 100 already in the early phases. It'll whittle down to like 30 by the end of the year of the super elite. But those kids are creating that sort of Silicon Valley effect. And this guy who I didn't speak to before, he came and observed on his own. He noticed that in those like 9 months between his visits. So he saw that in those 9 months, something had changed. And what he noticed was like a tech vibe, that there was a Silicon Valley sort of vibe happening. And he didn't know what it was, but it was our intent to create that. We did that by design because we believe that's the path to victory. The path to winning is by creating the talent pool here.
Yeah, and it's interesting you said that. I just went and looked at his Twitter feed, and one of his last tweets is about Bank of America upgrading the country's debt to outweigh from market weight after an investor trip. So it seems like even like global banks, even though some of the biggest banks in the world are starting to make trips down into El Salvador. Now, how big do you think that is? Because not only like as you know, El Salvador, their financial markets and everything like that, but tourism is drastically up in El Salvador as well. So how big do you think it is that not only, you know, money's coming in, they're building the Silicon Valley, but the tourism's up, people are actually starting to come in, and, you know, it's essentially one of the biggest rebrands in history, where El Salvador is going from, you know, one of the most dangerous countries in the world to one of the more desirable countries for people to visit. Are you looking for the easiest way to get your Bitcoin off an exchange? Well, I've got it for you. It's Foundation Devices. They've got the number one hardware wallet in the Passport. They've even got a concierge service that can help you get your Bitcoin off an exchange within 1 hour private onboarding session. And they've got a great app too, which will give you extremely, extremely, extremely private features on that app, so you can use Bitcoin in the most secure way possible. So I've been working hard trying to get sponsors to help you get your Bitcoin off an exchange, and I found it with Foundation. And you can store your seed phrase with a stamp seed punch plate as well. So pair all those together, use promo code GREENCANDLE at foundation.xyz, and you'll get $10 off your entire order. All right, that's enough for me. back to the show.
Yeah, it's a classic undervalued situation that's mispriced by the market. And mm-hmm. the credit rating agencies still carry a triple C negative rating on El Salvador. But as Bank of America points out, it should be rated definitely as investment grade and probably B minus or B on the credit side. They're going to be paying off all their debt. The economy is growing and all in every possible sector. And so you've got an amazing opportunity still. I you know, you get El Salvador at the price you deserve. I think a year to 18 months from now, a lot of the bargains available will be gone. And you're going to start to see the country's debt actually trade at a premium. And you're going to start to see property markets really take off. And you're going to start to see entrepreneurialism and this high tech sector really deliver results. Add the volcano energy. So we're generating our own energy, mining our own Bitcoin. And we're the safest country in the region. And it turns into a safe haven for anybody who really wants to live in a high growth economy that's safe, that values freedom of the press and freedom of money. There's only one choice, and that's El Salvador. So I make the joke that it's going to be like the fall of Saigon. Remember, the U.S. was trying to get on the last helicopter out. I think that's going to be LaGuardia Airport or Kennedy Airport soon, with Upper East Side New Yorkers trying to desperately get out of it. Dodge, you get out of hell, New York, and make it to El Salvador.
I like that point that Max brings up about how El Salvador is mispriced by the markets. And, you know, that's the thing about a visionary, you know, and the rebrand you talk about is real. It is the greatest rebrand in history, I believe, what has happened in El Salvador, because it was the most dangerous country on earth in 2015, 2016. And now it's the safest in the Western Hemisphere. Now, we watched, you know, we were here by the president's side as he embarked on this mission to turn it into the safest country in the Western Hemisphere. And do you know what? Just like every big visionary or entrepreneur, it happened to Steve Jobs. It happens all the time to Elon Musk. Everybody in the mainstream media mocks them and says it's not possible. Everybody said that it was not possible to fix El Salvador, that it would always be violent and people would always flee the country, because the mindset here had been like that, that the public officials were always corrupt. The presidents they elected always stole from them. The gangs were always given free rein and everybody was afraid of them and everybody gave them things. The U.S. poured money into it, all these NGOs, everybody poured money into fixing the problem through all these sort of techniques that were basically money-making schemes, really, these sort of enterprises where they're really not trying to fix anything. They're just creating human rights organization sort of NGO jobs. But they didn't fix a single thing. And he took his own path, President Bukele, and he fixed it. Like, we saw that happen in like remarkable speed. It's crazy to see how it was like as bad as San Francisco. Now imagine fixing San Francisco within 12 months. Like, imagine, apparently you can do it, right? You could fix all those Philadelphia, drug addicts on the streets, all that violence, all that crime, all that despair. You could turn it around if there's the will and if there's the leadership.
Or if you're a visiting Chinese dignitary.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Now it's great. And the development of El Salvador, it seems to be outstanding. I've been there one time before for adopting Bitcoin, which last year, and I'll be there again in a couple months from here from when we're recording. But is there any, I guess, like worry that, you know, a lot of people are coming in and, you know, it's maybe a lot of foreign influence then now that kind of diving into El Salvador that maybe is hurting the locals? If I'm playing a little bit of devil's advocate here, or are you just seeing kind of positive, I guess almost like positive reinforcements coming in?
Well, no, because the president gave economic freedom to the population to be prosperous and to put that earnings of their work into unconfiscatable, uncensorable Bitcoin. So it's the complete opposite of what you'd find in any other country where they abhor the idea of giving their citizens freedom of censorship resistant money and unconfiscatable money. So the mentality and ethos of Bitcoin is pervasive. The adoption rate in this country, I say, in terms of Bitcoin, is 100%, because everybody here understands to some degree what Bitcoin means and what it means to freedom of money, separating money from state, freedom of speech. And so this is just really across the board benefits. And as you know, in a Bitcoin economy, it's not like a proof of stake economy, where the more fiat money you have, the greater influence you have on the government to make it easier for you to accumulate more fiat money, right? It's called corruption. And the US is the king of it. Here, because they're heading toward a pure Bitcoin standard, there is no proof of stake mentality. People have the proof of work mentality. And that's true in the top of government, and it's true at the pupusa seller. We're all basically on the same proof of work standard.
And it's important that the security situation really, really altered everything here, because we had Bitcoin first. And at that time, Max and I said that this would become Renaissance 2.0, and we would have a similar impact of the florin on Florence. Like, you could have that sort of achievement. But the president pivoted for a year. He took time off and focused on fixing the situation for everybody. And if you have unconfiscatable money of Bitcoin, and yet, you know, half the population were living in areas that were occupied by plunderers who were violently taking their money and taking their earnings so that they couldn't even afford to buy any Bitcoin or stack any Bitcoin. Everything got stolen from them. It's hard to describe until you go there. If you go to Soyapango or Popa or Ilopango, places that were occupied by gangs, and where the, you know, there was a hopelessness, because it was like being in a fiat mindset where, like, no matter how hard you worked, they were just going to steal it. So why work hard? Because they're just going to steal anything you have. So that's over. And that mindset is shifting so rapidly where, you know, they're building stuff. They're starting to build and believe in the future. The one thing that is has had the most impact economically, in terms of what you're saying, like foreigners coming here, it's not actually foreigners, it's Salvadoran Americans, because there are 3.5 million Salvadorans who were forced out of their own country over the past 40 years by civil war, by gang war, and by political corruption. So the presidents of this country before President Bukele used to just tell people to flee if you can, like, get the hell out of this country. Like, they had abandoned it. The presidents, the leaders of the country, had abandoned it. They weren't planning on fixing it. And so it told people to flee, right? And so if you could get out, you got out. And the mindset of most people was like, if we could get, you know, our son to America, then that's the best hope we have for our child. Well, they're returning. There's 3.5 million Salvadoran Americans, Europeans. They live all over the world, Australia. A lot of them are starting to return. And they have a lot of capital, and they have a lot of wealth, and they have a lot of experience globally. You know, living globally, living outside your own country, always expands your mind and your talent and ability, and your, you know, you become a better able, like, anti-fragile person, right? So a lot of Salvadorans are returning that are diaspora, and so we do see you know, adjustment to that they're getting used to all these very successful Salvadorans from abroad who are returning to El Salvador and bringing a lot of capital with them.
Yeah, plus the numbers are in. As of this week, the numbers are in. We now officially have reverse migration.
Yes.
Where more Salvadorans going back to El Salvador than leaving. So we've crossed the Rubicon. We've crossed the that river down, the Rio Grande. And we've got a reverse migration really happening here in El Salvador, because the opportunity, the shining city on a hill, the Statue of Liberty, is a volcano in El Salvador. People who want opportunity and they want a future for their children are moving to El Salvador. And also the framing of the question about, well, is there foreign influence? I mean, the fact is that it goes the other way as well. El Salvador is influencing the region. El Salvador is influencing the world. We see that for sure. Other countries in the region and around the world are asking themselves, that's why the president's on the cover of Time magazine. How can we be more like El Salvador? So the influence is here and gravitating out, radiating out.
No, and I hear you on that too. And I mean, you know, Tucker Carlson had Bukele on, like mainstream media is starting to give some publicity to Bukele. And, you know, before, when was anybody ever really talking about El Salvador? It wasn't really the case. So, I mean, I think, you know, I hear you on that. I think that that's, you know, the big step forward. And I think that that's going to continue. But how big do you think it is that, you know, Bukele was has been able to get back into office and continue this run? Because obviously they made a huge step forward, but you know, it seems like they can continue to do that successfully here in the next 4 to 5 years.
Yeah, like I was saying, he has pivoted to the economy for his second term, and he told everybody before he did the security situation, before he fixed the security situation, everybody told him it couldn't be done, but he's like, watch, I'm gonna do it. And he did it. And now he's telling you he's going to like 10x the economy in the next 5 years, and people will laugh, and of course they'll laugh. But you know what? He's going to do it. You could bet against him if you want, but you know, that's a bad decision, I would think, as an investor, if you're going to bet against a guy who has fixed an unfixable situation with the crime here in El Salvador, and you know, in such a great way, where it became like Monaco overnight in terms of security, like the safety. And optimism here is like off the charts. So I think betting against this guy is a bad move. But, you know, Max and I are here because we're betting that he's going to deliver this 10X in 5 years. And we want to be part of it.
Yeah, I definitely think that that's going to come into play. Now, with the economic background, I know, Max, you said that Bitcoin price isn't a huge driver, but I feel like it could seemingly help Bukele, and it helped with everything as they're just DCAing in here. And, you know, seemingly the U.S. is, you know, economic situation is sort of in flux. And obviously we're going to probably cut interest rates here. We're recording this on the 17th and in the next day or so. So do you think that that would be a big driver, not only for, you know, the economic prosperity of El Salvador, but for more eyes to get on El Salvador as like kind of number goes up is almost the best marketing tool, even though, you know, as Bitcoiners, we don't really like to talk about it too much.
The answer is yes.
All right. Well, do you want to expand on that? Do you think like there's going to be some sort of like mental barrier where if it's 100K, 200K, do you think that there's some sort of number out there that will help drive more people in or, you know, I guess make El Salvador maybe a global powerhouse?
Definitely. El Salvador is becoming a global powerhouse in a 21st century economy that Bitcoin is the world reserve standard. And the freedoms offered here are greater than at anywhere else in the world. No one even comes close. The U.S. has abdicated its role as a beacon of freedom. You certainly don't find it anywhere in Europe. It's not exactly the hallmark of the Asian economies either. So as far as freedom, economic freedom and freedom of speech, there is only one choice. And then you have Bitcoin, and then you add in all the other pluses, and it's the most secure country in the region, the safest country in the hemisphere. And, you know, you just end up pointing towards El Salvador, and then you get El Salvador at the price you deserve. If you figure this out today, you'll move. You'll be on a flight tonight. If it takes you in a month or 6 months, that's how long it takes you.
I think we will become a powerhouse. El Salvador will, but not in the way that you're thinking like, oh, we have all the money in the world, because a lot of countries have a lot of money, right? Qatar has a lot of money, right? But they're not like a powerhouse in the way that El Salvador will become a powerhouse. And they'll become a powerhouse here in El Salvador because of what Max always refers to, the Statue of Liberty, a shining city on the hill. That if you can be in the hearts and minds of people globally as a place to aspire to believe in. And that's what the United States was for many decades after World War II, right? That anything is possible there, right? That this is the land of freedom and liberty and cowboys and, you know, good steak. That's the sort of thing, that's the powerhouse that we're going to have here. And a lot of it is to do with the David versus Goliath thing, the fact that President Bukele, he always tweets, I told you so, right? The very most powerful people in the world kept telling him he couldn't fix the security situation. And then they told him he can't adopt Bitcoin and it's going to be a disaster and the economy is going to collapse. And he stood by. And that's so hard to do. People don't realize like how that peer pressure and that, you know, most people aren't leaders because they can't withstand that sort of pressure. But he has that determination to see his vision through, and he sees the future. He saw the future with the security situation. He believed he could fix it, and he did. And he believes where he's going, where El Salvador is going, is to the place that he believes we can be. And so I think that sort of inspirational story, that's like a Hollywood blockbuster, right? So basically we become a powerhouse by becoming a narrative, a good story. People love those stories of this one guy who took on the mightiest powers of the world and survived, you know, he flourished, he won, he was victorious. And I think that's what you're going to see. I think when basically the US and Europe and everybody adopts a Bitcoin standard and everybody's follows his lead, I think his legacy and his legend are just confirmed for the next 500 years.
Yeah, and I think he's got a huge influence in Latin America, or at least, you know, in pocket communities. We're seeing other places like Bitcoin Jungle pop up in Costa Rica. Now, how big do you think that is going to be just for like the region in Latin America? Not only El Salvador being the leader, but, you know, other micro communities starting to pop up and, you know, potentially other leaders starting to take notice.
Well, in Chile, the most popular leader there is Nayib Bukele. You know, he's the most popular leader in countries all over the region. And in Central America, people are taking notice, and in Latin America, that Bitcoin and the Bukeleonomics is a vote winner, and voters are demanding it. And so we're going to see a wave of Bukeleism and Bukeleonomics, you know, wash all over Central America and Latin America. And so that's already happening. Certainly Argentina is going through an incredible change with Javier Milei in office. And of course, Bitcoin is part of the conversation there. And so we're seeing it in Central America, of course, as well. So it's the template for success is what's happening in El Salvador, the Salvadoran model, the Salvadoran dream, the Bukele miracle. You know, all these things we used to associate with countries like the United States are now being associated with El Salvador.
Yeah, and it definitely seems that is the way forward. More and more people are going to be looking to El Salvador, and especially in these next, 4 years. But, you know, one other question, though, is, you know, although people are starting to demand it, why don't you think we've seen other countries start to implement it? Is it just because we haven't had strong leadership in other countries, or maybe the timing of something? Like, why do you think it hasn't developed as rapidly as maybe it should?
Because there are no other leaders. Like it takes confidence. It's hard to be a leader. You know, we've had the privilege of being able to observe, and you can see how an ordinary person might not be able to. Most leaders are end up being politicians, right? People are politicians, and they kowtow to the global institutions of what, you know. When they say you can't do that, it's not possible. And it's powerful global institutions that are telling you that you can't do that. That's ridiculous. Nobody wants to be laughed at and mocked. Very few people do. It takes a leader to be able to withstand that, right? And I brought up Elon. Elon gets mocked all the time. Ha, ha, ha. You wasted $44 billion on Twitter. Ha, ha, ha. Like in the early days, that was all it is. Now what everybody's like, oh my God, we need to shut down X because it's become too powerful. And it's like, hello, I thought you said it was like I blew all my money. The same thing with this is like people, like other heads of state see the financial news attacking President Bukele over Bitcoin policy, and they themselves don't have the domestic popularity to carry their own Congress and their population, and a lot of them more you know, they work for those global institutions rather than their own domestic populations in many smaller countries around the world. So where you would naturally, like a more developing economy, it would be more natural to adopt Bitcoin. And I think a lot of them are afraid to upset the global institutions. They're more afraid of them than their own populations. So I think when the success, and you point out the price, that when the price of Bitcoin is like $300,000, yeah, then they're going to be like, okay, we know for a fact it's a success. And all of the, and Bloomberg and Wall Street Journal and the IMF and World Bank and all those people are saying, okay, it worked. He was right. And then they're all going to follow the leader once it's been blessed by the global institutions and recognized as succeeding.
Yeah. I mean, Apple stock in 1998, I think, was $10, you know, and it was going to, Michael Dell told Steve Jobs he should find a new job because the Apple was a failure and would never recover. And similar with El Salvador, it's like buying Apple stock at $10. And because Steve Jobs was a visionary and a genius, and so was President Bukele. And I always think of him as Steve Jobs and John F. Kennedy kind of rolled into one. And that's what we have. We have an incredibly talented, gifted leader. And other countries are just don't have the leadership. And I mean, in the U.S., it's kind of, I would say, borderline crazy that you've got a situation where the guy running for president is actively being, you know, attempted assassination attempts. I mean, clearly that is that's a problem of leadership. If you've got that kind of open warfare going on inside your own house, you know, that's not going to result in a very good outcome. So, you know, we don't have that here in this country.
Yeah. So you go from, you know, to the, imagine the courage, imagine the conviction, and imagine the determination and the strength of character that you have to be the president of a country of 6.5 million. That is the most dangerous place on earth, more dangerous than war zones in like Iraq and stuff like that. The most dangerous place on earth. People are fleeing the country by the thousands every month. And then you stand up and say, hey, you know what? We're going to become the most peaceful country. And, you know, we're going to become an economic powerhouse. And people are like, yeah, ha, don't be ridiculous, you stupid jerk. Like that. Like that's very few people have the courage to stand up and say, like, I'm going to do this. Right. Because it seems impossible. So who wants to? Most people just want to fit in and swim with the you know, the stream, go with the stream of how things are done, right? There's certain ways things are supposed to be done. And that's in order to maintain the status quo. And the status quo here for decades was similar to the one in the United States. You have two parties, they swap back and forth, they take turns plundering the state in various ways. You know, the US does it different from here. They just plundered took cash out and put it in their home, kind of like Bob Menendez, Senator Bob Menendez in the United States, right? Like it was a duopoly that kept everybody from having any hope or, you know, being the population was fed like a whole stream of uninspiring leaders. But not even leaders. I don't want to call them leaders. They're politicians, right? You know, bureaucrats who ran the country into the ground.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic, really, because the U.S. used to assassinate leaders in Central America while maintaining the facade of the beacon of freedom. And now the U.S. is assassinating their own leaders, and the beacon of freedom is in Central America. So there's been a complete role reversal.
Yeah, and we'll look for that to, you know, potentially continue the prosper of El Salvador. And it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out, especially with, you know, obviously the second assassination attempt that we just saw of President Trump. But Max and Stacey, you guys have been very generous with your time. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you got going on and where people can find you?
Well, you can find me on X at Stacey Herbert, no E in Stacey, or on Bitcoin Office as Bitcoin Office SV. SV is the country code for El Salvador. And there you'll find all the news about things like the Volcano Bond, things like our education projects, and as they break. And you could also go look at our strategic Bitcoin reserves, because we stack one Bitcoin a day, and that is at bitcoin.gob, like for boy or bravo, I guess, gob.sv. And you'll see us stacking every day, and the most transparent government in the world, because anybody can audit it. You can go there and see that today we're stacking a Bitcoin, tomorrow we're going to stack a Bitcoin, and the day after we're going to stack a Bitcoin, and you could check it out yourself.
Yep, you can find me on Twitter at Max Kaiser. Also, you might want to check out our golf tournament coming up January 10th and 11th at maxandstacyinvitational.com. Also, we're opening a restaurant here called Max and Stacy Food. You can find that on X at Max and Stacy Food.
Awesome stuff. Well, I'll put all that in the show notes. And then you guys will also be at Adopting Bitcoin here in El Salvador on November 15th and 16th. And you can save a little bit by using promo code GreenCandle. And Max, Stacy, I'll see you all there. So thank you so much for your time. And I'm looking forward to coming down to El Salvador and seeing all the great things going on.
Awesome. Right. See you then.
See you soon.
Thank you for tuning in to the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here and you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guests. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.